Welcome to The Streets Are Planning. This is your host, Jermaine Ruffin, and I am glad to be back with you. It's been a little bit, but we have a fantastic guest with us, Lakeisha Wright, and I'm going to give her an opportunity to introduce herself momentarily. But today's episode, we're going to be focused on transportation equity and what that means and what it means to you and how you can positively impact this in the city, in the neighborhood, in the community where you live. And also, you know, really start a dialogue and conversation about transportation equity where you are. And so we have a stellar guest. And as you know, we always start off with the, you know, where you're from segment. And so we're going to do that today and say, Ms. Wright, let the people know where you're from.
All right. So I guess first off, hi, Lakeisha. I am a senior manager of Streets and Equity at SPEN. And I am from Chicago. I grew up on the far south side of Chicago. I still technically live in the Chicagoland area. I'm like just outside of Chicago in a place called Oak Park right now. And that was a strategic choice. I'll get into that in a little bit. But yeah, I've been almost my entire life somewhere in and around the Chicagoland area.
The good old Chi-Town. I got a lot of family grew up on the South Side as well. And it's a beautiful city, one of my favorite cities to visit and spend time in. So, you know, when we think about urban planning and how folks, you know, come to this field, I always like to ask that question because we all come to urban planning and community and economic development and transportation and all in different types of ways. And we've been influenced in different ways to give us our perspective that we hold once we enter the field and what our passions are. So to focus on transportation, what led you to urban planning as a field, but what really led you to transportation specifically?
Oh man, that's a good question. I've had so many experiences that kind of shaped this, and it's all coming back to what I consider myself to be like in the bubble. So I grew up far south side, parents, you know, they did pretty well, pretty middle class. Everyone around us were pretty middle class. Like everything was fine. We had a car, multiple cars, things like that. And we ventured around the area in general, but never really on public transportation. And I remember like distinctly thinking like, oh, okay, you know, like people take the bus. Okay. Oh, look, there's a train. Okay. Here's regional rail. Okay. Like those things existed in my environment, but never really for me. And I remember like thinking too, like, okay, well, we have a car. We can go anywhere. This is an advantage. Things like that. Until I started to like branch out and really with high school, because I went to high school in the suburbs in a community that was nothing like my community. My community, again, middle income Black people for the most part. And, you know, a couple grocery stores here and there, nothing great, whatever. When my brother is 2.5 years older than I am. So we did cross over in high school at the same time. But when we started going to the school, we started seeing so many like different things. Like, okay, we had a car. That's cool. Then, you know, tons of cars and transportation, regional route, everything. Okay, well, we have a grocery store. That's cool. Realize suddenly they have tons and tons of grocery stores. And then I started to kind of like piece it together. Like, what is going on here? Like, I'm aware that I'm Black. I'm aware that I live in a Black community. I'm also aware that the people around me are not poor. So it started being this big disconnect where it's like, what's going on here? And also too, realizing like in this school, like, no, we're pretty average and things like that. And then think, but we don't have. And I just started diving deeper and deeper and deeper into like the concept of like, why don't I have this? And of course, you know, I'm Black. My parents taught me all about racism, what's gonna happen, what to look out for, all the like scary things behind it, but still didn't click until I like experienced it. So then it's all been around like place-based things. So like even since I was little, obsessed with geography, again, start putting those pieces together of disparities, my love for geography, ended up majoring in geography, even though everyone thought it was crazy. They're like, are you going to be a teacher? I'm like, no, I'm going to be a geographer. And like, excuse me, is that a real person? It's like, yes, absolutely. That's a real person. Graduated my undergrad in geography, was amazing. Loved every minute of it. Went into planning as the next step and kept diving deeper into it. So that's essentially how I found it, is just wanting to know, like, what is going on here? And then from there, devoted like my career to really focusing on Black and Brown communities mostly. Not saying that's the only place I worked, but in every instance, my lens has always been like, what's going on here?
You know, that's how a lot of us have come to the field. And so it's kind of one of those things where, you know, when I bump into a lot of Black planners, Black and Brown planners, is that lack that we've seen in our neighborhoods or in our communities and cities typically inspires us to say, why is this happening to us, especially those of us who may have experienced growing up in one community and traveling to go to school in another. And so, as you were saying, you know, there is a different lens that you, or maybe it's not a different lens. It's a different perspective that you gain traveling through different communities at a younger age, because it's much more noticeable when you go from your community to somebody who, you know, maybe, you know, we live in a nice 750 square foot, 1,000 square foot home, you know, whatever. Then you go visit somebody and it's like, hey, you got like 8,000 square feet and they got 15 cars, you know, all of this other kind of stuff. So that experience of you growing up and going to a school district that, you know, had more essentially, you gained your lens. And so as gaining that lens, what surprised you going into the transportation field when looking around and seeing that maybe you might be the only Black person or only person of color in the room having these discussions? How has that impacted you in your career? And yeah, how has that impacted you in your career? Then I'll ask the next question after that.
It's rough. It's rough because I'm often asked to speak for the Black community. In past positions, that's kind of been like the come to me thing. But as I said, to be honest, I don't have the experience of all Black people. It is across the board. It will always be across the board. I am me. I grew up in the far South Side. That does not mean I understand transportation or things like that on the West Side or even the near South Side or anything else. Also, my parents had great jobs, which means, again, we had cars. We had reliable cars. Like, there are those nuances in which if someone tells me to respond to something where it's like, what is it like to have to spend X amount of money to get to your job over here? I don't have that. I can't speak to that. However, what I can do is ask someone about it. I'm not afraid to ask someone, what do you need? What is this like, to get their story? And maybe in a way I may get more of that story from them sharing a culture. But when in the field I'm asked to answer those questions, it's extremely hard. But then you have that on a pendulum too, where people then don't assume you know what it's like, and then they erase your culture from who you are and your Black experience. So then it turns into, well, you're just like one of us, so we can't ask you what it's like. I'm like, again, I cannot answer for someone else, but I can tell you what it's like to be a Black female who needs to get from point A to point B and endure multiple forms of harassment on that way, whether it's from, you know, just people who are giving you unwanted attention, or even, you know, people of a different culture who may like grasp their purse a little bit closer when you want to sit down next to them. So it's internalizing all those things and realizing that you do have an experience. And again, it's using that experience to not prescribe something, but using it to connect with other people to then get them to tell you what they need. But yeah, I know I kind of like rambled on with that one, but ultimately it's hard. It's hard to be in a position to, again, have to answer, but have your own experience and to make things better. And also, I know, again, I'm like getting deeper into this, but there's the art of the head nod is what my friends and I like to call it. That when you're sitting in a meeting and everyone's sitting perfectly still and they're listening to you, but they're just kind of like, okay, she's talking some more again. But you look for that head nod from anyone in the room whenever you say anything. The subtle, just like, I got it. Yep. Okay. I agree. Is you look for that in everything you see. And when you start talking about your experience, especially again, as like a Black person in this space, you start to really rely on, does someone else hear this, or is it going over their heads, or is this connecting and things like that? So like having other people in that space is valuable, not only just for you personally and mentally, but also, again, to make sure you're on the same page, because you can also get that lot of nod of no, like, I don't know where you're coming from, Lakeisha, it's okay. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, you know, that's definitely an experience. And you raise something that I think is important for the listeners to pick up, which is the value of having different Black perspectives in all of these rooms, right? And oftentimes, and the necessity for equity in a lot of these spaces of, you know, not only just racially, but of experience, right? And of age and of gender and everything else, because you do have, we can't all speak up for everybody, right? Like we feel that. And I know a lot of us carry that burden of like, you know, or whether you call it a burden or whether you call it like, I'm just a champion. But either way, it's heavy and we shouldn't have to carry it alone. And so, you know, I'm glad to call you, you know, my sister in this field of planning and that you're in a transportation space. So, you know, as we said at the beginning, we're really going to talk about transportation equity. Now I'm going to give you the opportunity, to kind of frame transportation equity, as you've known it, as you've understood it. And then we'll follow up with some questions.
Okay. Yeah. So framing transportation equity is like, it's something I think about all the time because it comes down to choice. Wait, let me back up. Sometimes it comes down to choice, but in all honesty, we need to go beyond that because we're talking about the difference between equality and equity. And I feel like a lot of people, especially in the transportation field, stop at equality. So let's say me, Lakeisha, has access to scooters, bikes, the bus, the train, regional rail, or I can walk. Okay, fine. I have equal choices, but that does not actually mean they're equitable. Equitable meaning that when I step out my door right now, I can choose which one of those things to take and it will get me to where I need to go. But right now, as that stands, there are no scooters in my community. Bike share was discontinued. The train is a good option. I'll take that one. Regional rail runs hourly, so it depends. And the bus it's an okay option. So the fact that I have some that are not there, some that are theoretically there, and some that are real options makes it not equitable because there are communities in Chicago in which all of those things, maybe not regional rail because of the hourly thing, but all of those options are real things. Those people can walk out of their door and choose to bike, choose to take some other mode of transportation. They can choose to do that. And that's what I think is true equity, is bringing actual real options to every single person. And again, if you choose to take your car, I'm okay with that as long as that choice was even with all the other choices. I would hope that you don't. I think public transportation is a better option in most cases, just because it's convenient, paper parking, all the other things you typically hear. But my goal as someone who's in equity or transportation equity is honestly just to make sure that every single option can be weighed the same.
Wow, I haven't had it framed to me like that before of having every option available, but also weighed the same when you're deciding how you want to go from one place to another. And I think in cities like, you know, we'll take Chicago and we'll take Detroit because I'm here. You have, you know, you do have like in a downtown area, just like you have in Chicago, folks can kind of walk out their door and they have rail at their fingertips. They have the bikes, they have the scooters, as you mentioned. They have the bus options that run more consistently and often more on time than you have in the neighborhoods and things. And what folks really don't see is the flip side of that, is that if those services are being offered in the downtown areas in abundance, it's often at the expense of the neighborhoods. And so one of the things that must be considered, at least in my opinion, is, you know, what that means. That means lack of access across the board, right? Lack of access to jobs, mm-hmm. lack of access to educational opportunities, and lack of choice about how to maintain personal wealth, right? I mean, for those folks, one of the big benefits of having transportation at your fingertips is not having to have the cost of a car and saving that money and putting it into other expenses, right? And so that type of access, could you explain like the importance of that in your experience of work, but do you have any examples of where, you know, you were able to kind of help ensure more access in some of these spaces? I think with spin, with the scooters and everything else, like there's a lot of options out there right now. How would you address that of like where has access increased, or where do you think access should increase?
I think access should increase, especially for Black and Brown people, and especially across the board. I use this example all the time because this is a realistic example. Regional rail was the closest thing to my house where I grew up. And I was like pretty comfortable taking it by myself. And, you know, there weren't jobs in the area and I just like needed something to do. I shouldn't frame it that way, but it's the truth. I needed something to do instead of watch nonstop television. And also, you know, I'm like, so I'll just get a little bit of pocket money, learn how to save or not, in my case, when I was younger. And I'd hop on the train. And at some point it occurred to me that because regional rail was and it's called Metra here in Chicago, was like the only real option. You know, buses kind of went east-west. I needed to go north-south. The train stopped at 95th. I lived on 115th. That was not an option. We had regional rail. So like I would take it. And again, I enjoyed zoning out. I still do on public transportation, being aware and zoning out, or like, you know, reading a book, relaxing, things you can't do in driving. But it occurred to me at one point that the cost of the trip was more than I made an hour. And I started to like add that up, that basically, okay, I'm working an 8 hour a day, but the cost is more than that. Okay, so basically I like worked a 7 hour day. And on top of that, and again, I can get into this in a second more, I think Black and Brown people especially, but all people across the board need to start valuing their time as money, because those are other things you could be doing and your time is valuable. So I started thinking, okay, so it's taking me like 30, 40 minutes to get to work and 30, 40 minutes to get back. Then I'm losing an hour of work because of the cost of this. And then, okay, let's say I forgot my lunch or didn't bring it one day. Got to pay for that. I started to realize that my 8 hour day is starting to look a whole lot more like I'm working 5 hours, and that 3 hours of my time is out the window just for the convenience of getting there. And it's worse than that now. I mean, like recently looking at costs, like it's not maintainable for an average person who's working a low wage job, or even some working above low wage jobs. So that it kind of blows my mind. Now, my goal is always to have options and to cut out some of that time. Now, realistically, I may not be able to cut out that trip completely, but I'm able to provide options to make at least the time half of that, the value of your time, better. So that if instead of walking 20 minutes to get to the train, maybe you can scoot there, maybe you can bike there. Maybe if you want to walk there, maybe we can work on the infrastructure to get you there so that you're more comfortable, that you're not trying to, like, you know, sidestep rocks or not have a sidewalk and things like that, so that your trip is easier. And I try to think about those little things that, yes, obviously there is and always will be the need for widespread change and widespread, like, revamping of the system to get rid of systemic racism and things like that. But until we get there, there are little things that need to be done to make people's lives convenient. I just think, you know, there's in every solution that needs to be permanent, there needs to be a short-term, a mid-term, and a long-term solution. Because if I got to get to work tomorrow, I need that solution tomorrow.
Exactly. And that, you know, that option and access, extremely important. You know, the piece that I was actually in preparation for our interview, I was kind of going back to some of, you know, some of my readings and some of the things that I have kind of come across when we talk about transportation. And, you know, there was this piece that was done by the Transit Center. It kind of focused on the legacy of racism in transit, how we got here, and kind of what to do about it. And a couple of the items that they focused on were, you know, how do folks actually come to decide on transit, right? And you know, when we talked about, you know, options and things of that nature, you know, one of the things that you and I had discussed, you know, not too long ago, was in the Black and Brown community, sometimes how we view different modes of transportation can impact, you know, whether we have a service provided to us or not, or if we, how we are impacted in making these choices for our options of transit. And one of the things that, you know, I've come to see more and more, and as I'm going out in the community having conversation, is, you know, when we talk about bike lanes, which also double as like scooter lanes and things like that, as that infrastructure is going up around in communities, is that oftentimes in Black and Brown communities, folks see that as the first step towards gentrification. And I don't know if that's more like a Michigan, Detroit thing, but I've heard this in other cities when I'm talking to planners too. And they're like, no, we don't want, they, you know, the neighborhood doesn't want bike lanes. And you're like, well, you know, we're taking away an option of transportation for us. And we're keeping it as an unsafe activity as opposed to something that's dedicated and safe for everybody in the neighborhood to use. Is that something that you've experienced in your work in transportation of seeing, you know, bike lanes or even scooters or what is like, that might be nice, but that ain't really for us.
Absolutely. And in so many different forms, it's crazy. Like, one of the forms is seeing bike lanes appear and thinking, why are they taking up the street? They're just going to be in the way. They're going to get hit. They're going to whatever. Like, I see that a lot. And I'm not going to lie, in some of the places that I've seen where they have put bike lanes, they have been not the best. They feel like afterthoughts. They feel as if we're doing this because we have to for these people and we don't care. And people in those communities feel that, they see it, that it gets absorbed into them, that this, like, you know, kind of half-natured effort that you're putting towards this, like, you know, they feel that, so they're not going to use it. On top of that too, we have the people who are like, this is recreational, this is for fun, like, why would you take up the street for something for fun? Or, you know, this is dangerous, you're not doing it, it's just going to be kids riding and things like that. It's not really viewed as a real option. And even diving deeper into that not being seen as a real option, it's because it's an afterthought to a lot of communities. I mean, I just have to be honest here. When companies, transportation agencies, anyone brings something to a community, we can even take transit into account here. It's always after someone else has set something else up in another area of the city for people who are more well-to-do. So by the time it trickles down to you, you've already internalized it as not for me. And that's what they're doing, again, with the infrastructure, with bike lanes, but for the bikes themselves, for scooters themselves, for anything else, it's an afterthought. And I'm a huge believer in thinking about the psychology of planning as well, and how people, I guess it's somewhat sociology too, but how people internalize everything around them. And you start to internalize the whole like afterthought movement that planning is done to Black and Brown people, especially Black people, is that it just starts trickling down into everything else. Like, oh, the grocery stores, they're expanding. Oh, they finally made it to us. Oh, here's this park. Well, they've done new things in all these other parks. It's finally made it to us. It leaves us chasing. Like, we will always be in this like world of chasing. And if we go back and think about history too, in terms of transportation, I know I'm getting off the tangent, but I swear I have a point. we think about transportation, think about like back in the day, just not putting a time limit on it, we'll call it back in the day, everyone wanted a car and Black people didn't have those. And like the car was the amazing thing to do. And finally it trickled down and Black people had cars. We've moved on. Oh no, buses, trains. Everyone needs a bus and a train. How dare you ride your car, like ride in a car. Okay, now we've moved on for that. We finally got some buses and things like that into Black communities. Oh no buses, no trains. No, we've got to walk. Okay, well, give us some sidewalks. All right. Okay, we've got some sidewalks. No, bikes. We've got to be doing bikes now. Okay, it gets down to Black people. So it leaves, again, us never on the like forefront of creating what's needed and to express what's needed and to shape that future that everyone's going to. It's always we're a step behind chasing, and then having researchers and people like that talk about how sad and pathetic it is that these people are behind and they're dealing with this and they're doing that and they can't keep up with the technology. It's set up that way. So again, you can take that, you can even take it outside of planning and start thinking about how many times are marginalized groups set up to just chase the next best thing. And by the time it trickles down to them, the dominant group is on to the next.
Man, that you are absolutely right. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I think that's where it's so important when we were talking earlier about having, you know, varied perspectives and folks around the table, is not even just around the table, but owning the table, right? And owning the communication path and the streams, and why I, you know, this platform and others like it are so important, is to share that perspective that you just said. Because the neighborhoods are always seeing this as a secondary benefit brought to them, as opposed to a primary benefit addressing a need or concern that they have that needs to be immediately addressed for the betterment of their community, right?
Think about how many times too that you're at a meeting, you know, being a person that's on the quote inside unquote, that an idea is fully fleshed out and ready to be proposed before it goes to the community. And it turns into a info session than a feedback session. So it's more like, okay, well, we have this idea that we know we're going to fund. We just want to see how you feel about it. People express their opinions, good, bad, anywhere in between, or even just questions in general. And it's met with like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, we'll take that feedback. It's like, no, you're probably not going to take that feedback, or you may take bits and pieces of that feedback to make it seem like you did, and then still move on with the original project. Rarely do people come to the community with just, you know, an open platter and asking the community to just fill it in with what they want. Full buffet, you pick the choices that's going to be in this buffet. And, you know, we're just, in fact, you know, we're not even going to come with containers. We're not even going to tell you the size of containers. We want to just come to you and have you tell us, and then we make that happen. It's extremely rare. And I feel like the culture of planning is to like, say, don't do that. How, no, what are you talking about? You got to come to them with a plan. No, in fact, you don't. That is a lie that's being told and perpetuated. You don't actually need to come to them with a plan. You need to come to them with open ears. That's it.
Yep. And what the options are to help them solve them, right? Like help to solve the issues or challenges that they are identifying. And that is the importance of where I think seeing this shift in, I'm starting to see it more and more, is a shift in planning of folks who are thinking in the same way that you are and that I am, and thinking that it's our responsibility as planners, not just something like it's your job, it's a professional, but it's the responsibility of a planner to go in and listen first and solution down the line. Right. You know, it may be the solution can come after you hear it is like, okay, I can connect you to this resource, or I can connect you to, you know, this, and then boom, everything is done. But that's not typically how it works. It's going into the community, listening first, being honest with what you actually can do, because I think that's another failure in planning of like, you know, if you let folks dream and dream big and you encourage that, you should. But you also have to be honest with, okay, here's the actual resources and the things that we have available to assist you in addressing some of those great ideas that you have to put you on a path to what your goal may eventually be, right? Or what you can potentially achieve. And that's so important. That's so important as planners.
I know this can't be a conversation happening in 2021 without mentioning the pandemic, so I'm going to, but...
Yeah.
Think about what the pandemic did. I mean, it's done horrible, horrible things. But one thing it opened up is it made people lose that fake rigidness that everyone had. We suddenly saw a flexibility in companies, organizations, and governments that no one thought possible. I think to the neighborhood I live in and how like 2019, if someone said all of the restaurants in this area are going to take up parking spots, people would have like thrown a fit. And this is a super liberal area, but people would have thrown a fit. They would have been yelling, screaming, thinking like, this is like unbelievable. Parking's already a major problem here. How dare you? But then 2020 came. And suddenly people started to realize like these businesses, these beloved businesses, our neighbors, our people like that need to be able to do something for their livelihood. And, you know, midsummer, it became like, oh, you can eat outside. Well, these people like their sidewalks and they're regularly used. What can we do? Take parking spaces. Okay, great. City, work on that. Pass that in like a week. So it's just thinking about that shift and how that rigidness that we're under is not real. So the same thing when people, especially again in Black and Brown communities, come to you with a problem and you think of that solution in such a narrow way and say like, okay, it doesn't fit our suite of like four things we know we can do, we're never going to solve any problems. So I think of it that way as well, that, you know, you can't come with those four solutions. You maybe one of those will work. Maybe one can be modified. That's great. I hope it can, you know, just because that means at least someone was on the right track. But we can't attack problems that way anymore. Like we just can't. And I think with residents and having them come up with solutions, I think there is also another lie that we tell ourselves that Well, they're not urban planners. They won't know what they're even asking for. They know what their problems are. That's it. That's all they need to know. That's all they need to know. We are the ones to figure out, okay, how do we solve it? But, and also, for the record, I think most people do know how to solve their problems. They just don't have access to like the things that they need to do it. But if they don't, then that's when we come and then we bring it back to them based off of that. And if they say no, they say no. Like, we listen to that, move on, keep correcting. We'll eventually get there. But the fastest way to get there is with them at the table.
With them at the table, absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that I wanted to kind of, you know, make sure that we talked about too is, you know, when we talk about transportation options and having these discussions of, you know, how do we get folks to kind of view these options, one, by making them available, right, and more readily accessible. But the second part is that I often look at the way that folks kind of, you know, in some urban communities reject like riding a bus from a cultural perspective is that it's seen as a poor person's tool. Right. Like it's all poor folks use that to get around and to go to where they need to go and all that. I'm not poor, or I don't want to be perceived or looked at as poor. And, you know, I started to think about this. And so I wanted to ask you the question of, do you think that with that kind of discussion, do you think it kind of comes down to the perspective of what amenities are offered to those folks who are operating in these spaces? Like you say, for somebody riding rail or light rail, it's often, you know, they can sit there, nice seating, you know, it might be a bathroom or a covered shelter or something like that that's available for folks to where they don't have to endure kind of the weather, or, you know, it's seen in a different perspective. Whereas folks who have to ride the bus, which in a lot of communities, you know, I'll use Detroit and Chicago, it's like it's a lot of Black and brown folks who ride the bus. And oftentimes you just see just a sign. It's just a sign slapped on a pole and you're standing there, whether it's rain, hail, sleet or snow, and it's not an amenity there that would entice you to endure that, to use it as an option. Not even before we even get the cost, but to endure it as an option. If you see somebody going through that and you're in your car, it's like, why would I change what I'm doing?
Exactly. That's exactly it. It's really just like, one, it's understanding cultural differences, and those cultural differences can spread from neighborhood to neighborhood. Like they don't even have to be the same amongst Black people, but it's all in perspective. Like, again, standing at a sign in a patch of dirty grass, waiting for a bus that may or may not come on time. Like it's horrible. And in fact, I was reading something earlier today, and I apologize, I can't think of the source of it, but it was talking about the stereotype of like Black people not being on time. And the person broke it down, and it was just incredibly interesting that that is actually something that stems from poor transportation options. So that if you said, be here at this time, that person may be on the bus, and that bus is probably running late or may have some issue or get stuck in traffic or all these other things, so that person was never really able to predict the time that they wanted to be there. But again, it's not like, okay, that person's going to come early, because if they're standing there early means standing at this bus stop and, you know, hoping for the best, and you know, you may be just standing alone. So it's like, let me get there closer to the time. Okay. You're like, oh, your bus comes early. That person arrives early. Black people are burdened with things like the label loitering. Something as simple as that. I arrived somewhere early. All right. Well, it looks like I'm going to have to stand here and hope no one thinks I'm being shady. Like, there's so many elements to these things that people don't think about. And so again, that ultimately ended up with a culture of people who needed to get to the bus and tried to keep it to last second to, you know, not have too much time on the front end and also not much too much time on the back end. So it ended up with people just kind of being 5, 10, 15 minutes late all the time. And then becoming internally like a thing that we've absorbed as a culture, as a stereotype, when ultimately, again, it's just from bad transportation. But I think too about other cultural things in transportation and how those also like kind of turn into a thing. It's similar with biking as well, where it's like, oh, that person's on a bike because they can't afford a car, or, you know, all of these other things. It blows my mind to think about, and it blows my mind to think that in 2021, those cultural differences between how like something like a bike or scooter is viewed can change so drastically in the same city on the same day. Like, who draws the line? Who, whatever. It's fascinating to me. And I think too, if I were to be a planner with another specialty, I would just dive deeper into those things as well, into, you know, cultural nuances in all forms of transportation and urban planning in general. But yeah,
I think you're birthing a field right here. Because it is, and that's the piece that a lot of folks, you know, don't consider in urban planning. And especially when, you know, the field has been predominantly white for years and years, of that cultural nuance and cultural understanding of where you have to make changes and adaptations in order to make a particular transit option or a planning option or whatever the case may be, relevant and meeting the needs of the community that you're serving. And so, you know, I think and this is anecdotal, but I'll say, I think, you know, when you have covered bus stops with seating and, you know, options of when the times that the buses are going to arrive, you create a healthier environment for folks who want to use that option, as opposed to like what we're saying is like, you got to go out there, hope and pray police don't pull up, you know, or somebody in the neighborhood is like, hey, man, you've been out here for about 45 minutes. What's going on, bro? Like, you know, what you doing here? You know, and those are real conversations that people have to encounter. Not to mention one of the major things that that comes with this lack of amenity, but also lack of consistency and access is, you know, you mentioned the getting to the job on time, but then there are places where there are job hubs that folks in certain neighborhoods can't even get to at all. They might have to change the bus three or four times, walk a little bit, maybe take two different modes of transportation to get to a job, especially in a larger community. And that's something that I think goes unnoticed or unmentioned, but is actually a form of racism that I think, you know, needs to absolutely be addressed head on when we're talking about transportation, especially in cities like Detroit, where, you know, you got these job hubs around in suburban areas and you can't get to them. And I'm sure the same thing exists in Chicago.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think too, like, not only when these jobs are like very, and again, we're talking about decent wage jobs, like they're so far away. And again, even if there is a bus, it's one of those buses that runs every half hour and, you know, got to catch it, hope for the best, hope that it runs near you, things like that. And then when it comes to choosing housing around transportation as well to get to that job, even if you're like, all right, at least a bus goes to this area, even if it's, you know, a super long bus ride, I can just live near there. Can you afford a home there? Like, there's so many other options. I like, in my mind, I always picture like any issue, especially in transportation, that like deals with Black and brown people, that like take like a deck of cards, shuffle it, deal yourself five, and I guarantee you any one of those fives what relevant to a decision that was made for that person when it comes to transportation. Again, like personal safety, just the perception, just plain waiting and wasting time. Like, there's so many elements. And again, I may be generalizing here, but I feel like some people, especially if we're talking about like you know, upper middle to upper middle class, like white people in a certain area or a certain job or certain education, whatever, that there are issues that they're dealing with. I definitely don't want to ever say that they don't have issues. It's just, you know, life is great. But for probably every card they're dealt, there's, again, 5 to 10 more that we have to consider. And going back to what I was saying about just like the act of loitering, I was having this conversation with my mom the other day, and I was talking about coffee shops, and there's one that I love to walk to, and I sit with my laptop and I'll do my work when I'm just like trying to power through things, and talking about how odd that is if you really think about it, because in the Black community, that's called loitering. Now, I'm sitting here, I have my drink, but I've been here for 2 hours. That's loitering for Black people. And it comes down to like those type of differences. So you were also talking about the bus, like waiting on the bus and things like that. If my bus doesn't come, I'm sitting here, and same thing. Is someone going to think that I shouldn't be here? Is someone going to be like, oh, call the police on this person who's been sitting here for too long? There's so many aspects to this that I feel like aren't considered. And there are little things too that you can only get from listening to the community themselves, that there may be a consideration. Again, I'll use another example from my job, from one of my jobs back in the day, is that there was a bus stop and it was right by a liquor store, and people did not want to wait there because the liquor store was like super shady and kind of scary. And like people would actively choose to not get on or get off there because of it. The people were afraid, and when someone would be there for too long, again waiting on the bus, that people would make the consideration like, okay, it's hard to process all the decisions that are made and just choosing. But it goes back to like my beginning thing, like I want everything to be equitable. I want everyone to have that choice and decide if that choice is right for them at that moment. I may not feel like taking my bike today, so I'll take the bus. Okay, I don't feel like taking the bus today, I'll take the train. Okay, I don't feel like either, I'll take my car. Like, I just want people to be able to walk out their house and say, okay, I'm going to do this today, and not have it be dependent on like, this bus stop seems kind of shady. Oh, this stop is going to be in front of this liquor store. Oh, I might have to wait too long in a place where I'm uncomfortable. Yeah, it just goes across the board.
Yeah, this is it's definitely something that we got to keep at the forefront of decision making, especially, you know, while we have the time during this, you know, this ongoing pandemic of, you know, coming up with solutions, right? I mean, folks are staying home more, folks are having the option and opportunity to work from home more. And so you have one of the things where cars are being needed less, right? And so for some folks, cars are being needed less. And I think this move to alternative transit options being new, like we'll talk about like the e-bikes and the scooters and all of those options that are now coming to the forefront as opportunities. And that equity piece cannot be lost like it was lost in the bus conversation, the rail conversation, and the tools of yesteryear that, you know, in certain communities are now like, you know, LA is expanding their rail line. And here in Michigan, we had Grand Rapids to put in a rail line. We have one here in Detroit that's a light rail system that goes, you know, about 3.5 miles that we want to see expanded. And that equity piece, that equity conversation has to remain at the forefront.
One of the things I love the most about my job at Spin is that we're actively trying to stay ahead of the curve so that we aren't actually in that expansion space. We don't want to be in expansion space. We want to be in the space where we already did it and we're making it better, not just bringing it to people all the time. like trying to think ahead, like, all right, we're going to release this fleet. We're going to be in this market. We're going to do this thing. How do we make sure that it's for everyone at launch, not for these people, and then we'll work our way down?
Yeah, so the Streets and Equity team over at Spin, you know, you've been a great partner. It's been something that I've enjoyed having conversation with you and with Kay and working together to kind of bring podcasting to folks, but to also better understand, you know, what it means to provide this level of equity in your service. And so, you know, I think one of the things that also comes up in this transit equity conversation is who is leading and who are participating in these different discussions, who are folks of color or folks who can go into these communities, create relationships and really get that firm understanding of what needs folks have and what challenges folks have. And the one thing that I've, like you mentioned before, that I've really enjoyed kind of seeing with you all is like you've been doing different events and things in all of the communities that you are working in. And so one event that you had just recently, the parking day piece, you know, where you were down in Atlanta and, you know, you and Spin was in all of these different communities. Can you kind of talk about parking day as an event that Spin is participating in and different communities, not only just here in the States, but globally?
Yeah, the whole goal of parking day is to have people reimagine what a parking space can be. We think of it instantly as this is a space for a car to sit while I'm not using it, but realizing that that space can be anything on the planet. Like one of the quotes from one of the people in like our future parking day video said something to the extent of like, you know, the people, like everything is for people. Like people are the goal here. Cars are objects, people are people. We should be designing things for people. And I thought that was like just such a like good way of phrasing it, because that's always our goal, is to think of people first and less so of the object. So for parking day, we wanted to expand everyone's minds when it comes to that parking space and let people imagine what could this space be other than a parking space, and then bring that awareness to people who pass by, who, you know, see these spaces as normal and cars in them as normal, and say like, oh, wait, whoa, what's this? And then someone explains like, this is parking space being used for something different. And the reaction is almost always like, oh, that's so cool, I didn't think about that. Or, wow, this is here. Oh, I didn't think about how large a parking space really is. And yeah, just bringing that awareness to people. And I think it turned out great. I think doing it in a variety of cities, you know, just expanded our reach in terms of that. And then adding other, you know, like in Atlanta, we did our equity safety training as well there too. So kind of getting people to not only be aware of the use of parking spaces, but also be aware of advocacy for Black and Brown people when it comes to transportation. Like there's a section of it too, like where we talk about bike lanes and how, you know, yes, we understand that the thought about bike lanes, gentrification, but also thinking through that this is actually something that's great and needed and giving you another option.
Yeah. I think with that, I think the other piece of this is introducing new modes of transportation. And one of the cool things that, you know, we had a conversation about is, you know, this micromobility and having access to scooters and e-bikes and all of these new tools that are kind of popping up, you know, for greater use in communities. When you think about this micromobility piece that Spin offers, how do you see this maybe in the next year or two? And this is just purely, you know, from your perspective, of what would be ideal with Streets and Equity and the team over there of being able to help that. I know you said not the expansion, but, you know, maybe it is expansion. Maybe it is just making folks aware. What are some of the things that you would be excited to kind of put forward or see happen in a lot of these communities that you're working in to introduce micromobility as a potential option, transit option?
I would love to see people use them in their everyday lives. Like don't get me wrong, I enjoy people use them for fun and having a great time on them because they are fun. Like that's definitely a key thing, but I want people, especially in the neighborhoods and less so in, again, touristy areas or super dense areas or things like that. I want people to see them as like, this is actually a good option for me to get from A to B and start using it that way as an option from A to B. And I think that that's going to come with being aware of those cultural nuances that we talked about before, that we can't present things to people and say, well, you know what it is, so then use it. Like that is, it's not the right approach. It's more of opening those doors, and those doors may be open through working with businesses in the area to say, all right, hey, you know, your employees may want to use this, looking at housing units housing developments or things like that, and say like, all right, hey, here you go, here is an option, and just start introducing this so that it becomes part of their lives as it's expanding. And yeah, I think just on top of how like the streets and equity team can do it, I think it is keeping the doors open for all voices and for listening to ways people are using it but want to use it as well, and making those things happen. Or if there are barriers to using it, cultural or otherwise, that we see how we can address it or how we can engage local people to address those issues as well.
I think that's extremely important, and I would agree with that strategy. And we would definitely support that moving forward, because I do think that there is an opportunity to shift with everyone, you know, really, really having, you know, climate change at the forefront of our thinking, access at the forefront of our thinking, and this new generation, making equity not just like a secondary, a third, you know, a tertiary kind of thought process for them. It is at the forefront of what a lot of us, I'm including myself in that. I'm a little older, but you know, I'm on the edge of that. But at the forefront of what it is that we are all striving for in planning, but more so in our cities, in our neighborhoods, and in our community, that equity has to be at the forefront of all of this. And it goes back to that access piece that you mentioned earlier, having various options and opportunity, making the amenities, a little more plush, a little more updated to address the needs of the community, and make folks feel secure and understand that these options can be consistent. They can be on time, and that as a culture, we're shifting to say transit and transportation should be available to everyone at any moment in their lives, of being able to traverse from one side of the city to the other, or from their job, or to get their kids to soccer practice or a football practice, a basketball, whatever the case may be. We need to be able to have these options and opportunities available to all. And I'm grateful that you, Lakeisha, and your work and what you've been doing, that you are in this work for the good of the people. It's appreciated. And I think that, you know, one additional question before we wrap up, I just have to ask this. You mentioned that, you know, you like when you would ride a train, you kind of zone out and things like that. A lot of every show, you know, we use an inspirational song, something that just kind of defines, you know, what the episode was about. And where I pluck that from is oftentimes a conversation of what the vibe of the conversation is, but also what does the planner that I'm talking to, what do you zone out to? What are you listening to? When you're zoning out, whether you're walking, whether you're on the train, you know, whether you're in your car, when you decide to take that out, if you do decide to take it out, you know, what are you listening to? What moves you when you're moving about the city?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I am, which is really odd, probably a less of a music fan than the average person, but I love podcasts, love them. I can zone out to a podcast at any point in time and just start taking notes in my phone about things that I want to think about or like things I thought were super cool. Start texting them to everybody I know. Did you hear about this? Do you know about that? Oh, did you hear that connection of this? That's my favorite thing. And it's like variety of topics, like from food to video games to conspiracy theories, like all types of things across the board. I love them all. And I love too, if there's like if this is like not even like a real category, but in my head is a real category, anyone who relates anything like place-based back to something that doesn't seem place-based, like that's my favorite thing on the planet to listen to. It's fascinating to me, but yeah, big podcast person.
Hey, that's awesome. I mean, I appreciate that. So, but you know, I mean, it is something that I actually enjoy too. I listen to music. I'm a hip hop fan, R&B fan, like, you know, jazz, the whole nine. So I do listen to a lot of music, but I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I do think that, you know, where you and I, we might have to kind of compare notes is the conspiracy theory kind of, you know, the unsolved, you know, kind of crimes and all that other kind of stuff. That's where I find myself, you know, listening to the most. I like to think of myself as an amateur couch detective, and I'm probably one of the best in the country, you know, but I think you would say the same about yourself.
I like anything to me too, the like, the dumber it is, the more I love it. I'm like, God, it makes no sense at all. I love it.
You know, hey, you gotta have fun. You gotta have the opportunity to like you say, to sometimes zone out, to kind of shift gears. Because you know, when you allow yourself that space, it brings about those creative ideas and everything else when you're on your game and you're really in the zone, focused professionally and personally. So, but listen, this has been a great time, a great conversation. And, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show. And, you know, folks who are listening, always remember, anytime, anywhere, any place, the streets are planning.